It is Saturday, August 6th, 2011. We are broadcasting live from the Santa Cruz on the central coast of California. This is Public Radio KUSP. The bandwidth for GeekSpeak.org is provided by GNI. And it's time now for GeekSpeak. Welcome to GeekSpeak, bridging the gap between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed during GeekSpeak are not necessarily those of KUSP. Today's theme song is by Craig Strachan. It's called Garage Mechanics. If you'd like to participate by making a song for us, please do so by going to geekspeak.org. GeekSpeak is Creative Commons, share and share alike endeavor. In the second half of the show, I invite you to join the conversation. The phone number is 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And that is a toll-free number, of course. We'd love to take your calls regarding any topic today. That'll be in the second half. But in the first half, we have Lindsay Lonnie. She's a systems analyst. Good morning, Lindsay.
Good morning, Lyle.
And Miles Elam. Miles is a software engineer and political junkie.
Good morning.
Good morning. And we'll be talking about news. So Lindsay, I'd love to know about face matching. This is an interesting story.
Yeah. So at Black Hat this week, and for those not familiar, Black Hat is a security conference that happens usually in Las Vegas once a year. Carnegie Mellon University researcher Alessandro Acquasiti, I think I pronounced his name correctly, we'll see. He described three experiments that his team did that bring into question the safety of sharing your picture and other personal information on public sites like, you know, Facebook and mm-hmm. Google profiles, things like that. They assembled a database of about 25,000 photographs taken from students' Facebook profiles that were public information pictures. And they set up a desk in one of the campus buildings. And they asked willing volunteers to peer into a webcam where facial recognition software put a name to the face. And about 31% of the students were identified just based on off-the-shelf facial recognition software. And it took less than 3 seconds for most of those identifications.
So they had no access to any special information of any kind. They just scraped Facebook of all the people they could associate with that school, of all the public pictures, and with that association, taking a picture of the person, we were able to get a name. And what was the percentage again?
31%.
Not bad. Accuracy.
A little less than a third. Yeah.
It's kind of creepy, kind of neat.
Yeah. As a proof of
the concept, end of anonymity.
Yeah. Right. Did we really have any to begin with? I don't know. Uh-huh. Maybe a little. But as a proof of concept, they developed an iPhone app that takes a photograph of someone, pipes it through the facial recognition software, and then displays on screen that person's name and vital stats.
Assuming they're one of the 30% or so.
Right, exactly.
Interesting. And is this app actually in the App Store? Is it available?
I don't think so. Okay, I think it was just part of their research and used to make their point. They did two other tests on top of that. They compared 278,000 Facebook profiles against 6,000 profiles extracted from an unnamed dating website. And about 1 in 10 of the dating site's members, nearly all of whom were using pseudonyms on the dating site, turned out to be identifiable.
Right.
So
something like OkCupid or something, one of these sites where you put up your profile and you try to find other people to date. And normally you do that kind of anonymously because at first you want to make sure that the person you're going to run into is not going to be someone you... It's creepy.
Right. Right.
Interesting, but 1 in 10 were able to match. And I would assume that a lot of those sites, the pictures that they put up are minimalistic. On the Facebook side, the pictures seem to be, you know, a lot of the pictures of you, if you will, are from other people, right?
Right.
And they kind of want to share the picture with you, so the best way to do that, of course, is to tag you in the picture, and then, bang, you're connected to it. And if you're not keeping track of that, there can be a lot of pictures of you up online with your name directly associated.
Right. And something I was thinking about that would be useful with this is related directly to that. Google has something where if you're an artist, you can take one of your pictures and it'll search all their database of images for matching images of your copyrighted image.
Somewhere. Right.
If I could go online and search for my image, I'd be able to see, you know, if someone else has been posting images
of
me.
Right. Yeah,
and
yeah.
hopefully contact them and ask them to take them down.
Right. But
then
not
again,
just by name.
by the time it's up there, it's...
you did that with me. You're like, can you take this picture down? It's not very flattering. I'm sure.
Yeah.
But of course, it's going to be around forever.
Sorry. No, that's fine.
thank you, Lindsay. And in just a minute, you're going to talk about the invasion of the body hackers, wireless medical devices susceptible to hacking and attacks. Ooh, interesting.
Dun, dun, dun.
But first, Miles, hi.
Hi, good morning. Airport body scanners are not just for the U.S. Other countries have been trying them as well. The millimeter wave body scanners.
The ones that make you look naked?
Yes. And in particular, the German government has just completed a 10-month study.
Does it seem scarier to you when you say the Germans are doing it? Does it just seem a little creepier? Maybe I'm just listening to World War II history, sorry.
Well, unlike, you know, America, they're not happy with the results. The devices had a false alarm 7 out of 10 times and were easily confused by layered clothing, boots, zippers, pleats, and even an incorrect posture.
Hmm. Wait, so are they doing automatic body? Like, they do the shortwave scanning of the person, and then a human being doesn't look at it, it's interpreted by a machine?
No. Human being is looking at it. The thing is, if you're going by density, and it's the millimeter wave is just going by... doesn't enter the body, it's only from the outside.
So then you got a zipper, and then there's this whole area here that's got this, like, balloon undefined space.
Or... just a metallic long thing that may be somewhat nondescript. And actually, Australia also started a trial, and the second person at the Sydney airport when he was going through this thing set off the alarm repeatedly due to, get this, sweaty armpits.
What?
I don't understand the setting off. Aren't you looking at a picture? So with the picture, all of a sudden, the armpit area looked extremely dense, like there was a piece of, like a plate metal in there or something?
When you're looking at it, it's not a straight picture. I mean, we do some hyperbole talking about it. It's like you're naked. It's a little bit off from that. Imagine those, the pin game. Things you'll see is Sharper Image, where like you put your hand in there.
You've got an array of thousands of pins, push pins. Sewing pins, and they're hanging in a grid, and you put your hand under it, and you push those pins up, you see kind of a shape.
Right.
It looks like that more.
It's very much like that, so that you don't see the details of the hand, you don't see the texture of the hand, you see this amorphous general shape.
Yeah.
It's a lot easier to misdiagnose, like, a bulge that might be there for having a certain shape.
When Google Earth first was launched, the Eiffel Tower was on this giant hill, so you have a terrain map that's made by radar, and then you've got images taken by planes that are put on top of that terrain map, and you get an effective, you know, terrain that matches the area, and then the buildings kind of, you can tell kind of where things are. And it happened to be that the Eiffel Tower looked like it was on this big hill.
Because the top of the Eiffel Tower.
The tower was this big radar reflecting thing. So it produced its own mountain, if you will, and the picture was put on top of that. And it was a perfect artifact. You know, you could tell it was an artifact if you looked at it. It was like, yeah, Paris isn't like that.
If you knew what Paris was supposed to look like.
Yeah, assuming you knew what Paris looked like, you knew that it was wrong.
And there's the problem where you have thousands,
so you're saying
a person
has a sweaty armpit, and all of a sudden that kind of area is an undefined space. It's not what you expect.
Changes the density of the material around you, changes your heat signature as well, so the air is a little bit different. Yeah.
Thank you for that armpit density story. I appreciate it. So they're not happy that they're not going to use it?
Who knows? Again, the U.S. is now a AA+ credit rating, not a AAA, so who knows? We may have less pull around the world with gadgetry.
Especially to Germany, who has amazing pull. And won't they just say, take off your clothes? No?
Wear your sweaty armpits.
Oh, let's hope we don't get emailed about that. Lindsay, do tell us about body hacks.
Invasion of the Body Hackers. Great article title. Again, at Black Hat this week, a researcher named Jerome Radcliffe called into question the safety of medical devices and implants that can be controlled via wireless networks. It took him about 2 years, but he was able to hack into the insulin pump that he wears on his body for his type 1 diabetes.
Wait, why was he hacking into his own insulin pump?
Because he wanted to do it before anyone else would.
That's very cool. That's such the mentality of hacking, of, you know, well, is this possible? How can I do this?
Right.
So the insulin pump, to be real clear, small device, has insulin in it, measures your body. I don't know if it actually measures it, but it doles out the insulin that you'll need in your body all the time in a small level. Mm-hmm. And of course, it acts very much like the pancreas acts. I think it senses as well, but I'm not actually sure if all the models do that. And these things are pretty light and pretty small. They're battery operated and they've got a tube that goes to your skin. So he was able to hack into it. What was he able to do? And did he have to actually take the device apart and connect to it, or did he do it wireless?
It was all wireless. So there's a certain bandwidth that medical devices use. They call it MICS, and it's in the 402 to 405 megahertz frequency. It's short-range wireless used to connect low-power medical devices to monitoring and control equipment. So that would be like pacemakers, defibrillators, neurostimulators, things like that. And of course, just a side note of the risk of this happening in the real world at this point in time is really low. So if you're diabetic and you have one of these, don't start panicking. It did take him 2 years and he is a hacker, you know, he's a professional, but he's trying to get knowledge out there ahead of time because the medical industry is increasingly putting these sorts of things out in the market. Let's see, the Bluetooth Special Interest Group, SIG, said there's more than 40 million Bluetooth-enabled health and medical devices already in the market. And in June, they finalized standards for Bluetooth-capable thermometers and heart rate management products. And so it's going to become things that are increasingly in the market. So that's more vulnerability.
Interesting. I mean, like a Bluetooth thermometer, right, that's wirelessly managed. You'd seem like you'd be able to embed that in your body somehow, mm-hmm. assuming you can get a power source. And then you can, on your phone, always know what your temperature is, your body temperature. It's kind of cool. In situations like that where it's just a scanning device, hacking into it means you can get some data, but it's not dangerous. Someone hacking into an insulin device could theoretically, you know, stop the insulin delivery and then slam it hard with insulin delivery, just do it all. So...
Or with a pacemaker, you could really...
Yeah, pacemaker, really bad. So his finding about being able to do this, he was able to do it himself. You're saying it's not a big concern because it's a rare chance. But the way that technology works, I mean, isn't it fairly easy for someone to have the package of software that he was able to create to do this in an airport, anywhere a public space is? And basically anywhere you're near this kind of device, if it's got this kind of availability, it seems like a pretty major problem.
Right.
So... what's he suggesting? I mean, he's like, oh, it's no big deal. It's okay. I did it, but I'm cool. that's just a matter of time before someone does it. It's not cool, right?
Well, he's not necessarily one saying that. It's, you know, the medical device companies and other companies. Basically, it hasn't happened much in the past. Maybe now that he's done it, there's going to be more people trying to mm-hmm. do that. But the thing is, unless you're someone someone's trying to assassinate you, there's not much benefit in doing that to somebody. So if you were a high profile individual, I'd be more worried about it than me on the street. Then again, if somebody wants to do that to me on the street, there's other methods they could use to harm me. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. I get
that. To hack into my
and that's the other thing is most of the hacking that's done in mass is for compensation, financial compensation, right? So people hack into systems to take over so that they get the processing power to make to send spam so they get revenue in, right? Or make people go to advertising. Mm-hmm. It's all about making some money, and being able to damage a person is not normally about making money.
Not normally, unless you're in a certain profession, but yeah. But,
you know, it seems like it's a perfect, CSI show, murder or something. Right,
there's going to be an episode that. I wouldn't doubt it.
So that's the medical implant communication service is the technology that is vulnerable, and it might just be with this one device. I mean, that's what he was able to hack.
What they're saying is that all devices are, to a certain degree, vulnerable, particularly if they're misconfigured or, you know, that you don't get the firmware updated or if they're older, just like any hardware, basically.
Yeah, right.
You know, if somebody hasn't updated their, you know, wireless reference point or whatever, their wireless access point's firmware, they're going to be more vulnerable to somebody hacking into it.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of theory. And so a lot of time with conferences like Black Hat, people do these things to bring awareness so that it kind of shakes everybody up and they go and they update their software or get new hardware or,
right.
You know, it's just a reminder.
I'm reminded of the Neuromancer storyline. I don't want to ruin it for you if you haven't read it, but the idea of somebody trying to control somebody else's actions. It's really easy when you've got a pacemaker that you can just stop their heart. You know, you
right.
need to do these things for me. Miles, you said something?
Yeah, just wanting to put it out there. with regard to security, the only true security is, you know, taking your computer or taking your device, encasing it in concrete and dropping it to the bottom of the ocean. In other words, it's not very useful as a device. Everything else is going to have some like drop in security. On the same note, I want to put some context to it with regard to if someone can hack into these things, the idea is how much effort does that require? And is that more or less effort than someone, you know,
pulling a knife
a block away, throwing a rock at you?
Right.
I mean, that's really kind of, you're talking about a distance there.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, or being able to pull a gun and shoot.
There's also an anonymous factor, right? So if you're in a public space, there's kind of an inherent safety in that there's a lot of people. So if something happens, there's, you know, safety in numbers, if you will. Mm-hmm. In this situation, there's no safety in numbers, right? Because anybody could have this device.
Well, in fact, there's danger in numbers.
There's danger in numbers. The more people you're around, the more likely one person's crazy with a backpack that's shooting everybody with insulin in their area, right? So that idea of, and that person could do that anonymously.
Right.
Until we have full
Anonymously, because we do have the ability to detect if there's a radio signal going on.
That's true. It's possible.
Even the best military aircraft that's out there, you can use a very basic device to detect whether or not they are radar scanning.
Right.
It doesn't matter that they're frequency jumping.
It's true. In fact, one of the ideas, you know, there's a lot of antenna systems that are coming out now that are completely programmable antennas, right? Traditionally, it used to be that you'd make a device and the device had a certain type of amplifier and antenna system. And because of that, it really could only interact with one frequency. So you got an FCC regulation for that frequency. You know, kids' walkie-talkies, for example, AM, they're not only a certain spectrum. You can't really do much with those without a lot of modification. But now a lot of those changes about what kind of the thing that antenna can do is in software. You know, it's in a BIOS, and you can actually change it real time. So theoretically, you could buy a device that is for, you know, communicating wirelessly in your home to your little robot, and then you could modify that device just with code to interact with someone's pacemaker. And that kind of flexibility makes those devices a little scary to some degree. There's a lot of regulation coming down with the idea of, well, let's lock it down. But the other way to think about that is, well, no, just make it a lot more available. And what you have instead is people have mod these radios to listen to weird MICS radio waves. They're like, wait, that's not a pacemaker. Someone's trying to access a medical device and set out a warning, right? Mm-hmm. So you turn the technology to help you isolate the problems that emerge.
In other words, I guess the point I was trying to bring across is the genie is already out of the bottle.
Right.
Closing your eyes and saying, oh, I don't want to talk about this, isn't going to solve the problem.
Right.
When you have a technology make itself available, like disavowing technology won't save you from that introduction of technology. You do have to, you know, acknowledge the technology is there and then decide how to deal with it.
Lindsay, thank you for the story about the body hacking. I appreciate it. There's a great article about that whole thing you've put up. And in just a second, you're going to talk about DARPA and hacking as well. This DARPA is the Defense Agency Research Program. But before we talk about DARPA, Miles, what's up?
So the ISPs, Cavalier, Cincinnati Bell, Cogent, Frontier, Hughes, IBBS, Insight Broadband, Megapath, Paytech, RCN, Wide Open West, Exo Communication. What do they have in common?
Are they cell phone systems?
No, not necessarily.
They've been hacked and breached.
They are ISPs that have been working with a company called Paxfire that makes a software that will detect if there's a request going over port 80, in other words, web traffic, going to a search engine, redirect it to a proxy to read that search information before sending it off to the actual search engine itself.
For what purpose?
For the purpose of being able to track the users.
Mm-hmm.
For monetary purpose, to find out what user behavior is like.
So the ISP discreetly is putting in a proxy. Specifically, a proxy is a web service that actually is a middleman kind of system. And it's a very useful system for decreasing outbound traffic. So If Miles was the proxy in the communication, I was talking to Lindsay, I'd say, "Hey, Lindsay," and Miles would say, "Just speak to Lindsay."
Hey, Lindsay,
and then you'd respond.
Hey, Lyle,
can I have some cookies?
Can I have some cookies?
Sure, why not?
Sure, why not?
So theoretically, I wouldn't necessarily know. I wasn't speaking with Lindsay, because assuming that the voices are all the same online, and of course they are. So that proxy, that middleman system, is very useful, because if 14 people are asking the same questions about cookies, Miles can ask Lindsay once and then respond all the same way to all the people that are on the network. That's the reason for proxies.
Yeah, think of a press office for any company or for a government or something like that, where you're not talking to specifically to the mayor every single time you have any little question. If some policy comes up, you talk to the press office,
the
press liaison, and the press will go up. These are all proxies, and the press for that matter is another proxy.
It's so funny. I think of proxy as a web term, but of course, proxy. Everybody knows the word proxy. I'm just defining a word anyway. Let's go on. So this proxy was put in place for all these ISPs discreetly to track what their individual users were doing.
Yes.
Yee.
Yeah, and it may in fact be illegal. So that's going to be hashing itself out over time. However, if you're a customer of one of these ISPs, and or if you're just worried that your ISP might do such a thing, there is something you can do about it. If you're a Firefox user, for example, you can use the plugin HTTPS Everywhere. HTTPS being the secure socket communication.
We talked about that last week, I believe.
Right. That's when you're putting a credit card number into a website, you should be going over SSL. You should be seeing that HTTPS:// instead of just HTTP.
Again, that whole thing has a handshake of a public-private key, and it encrypts everything so that nobody in between can see what's going on.
Right.
Unless, of course, you're on the older iOS, in which case... But that's last week's story.
Right. Cool. But the idea behind HTTPS Everywhere is that it has about 1,000 sites that are in a registry that it knows that these sites have a secure channel available to them. And that includes Google searches, by the mm-hmm. way. And also Bing, I believe.
And you can't do proxying if you're talking SSL, because the middleman doesn't know what the communication is
right.
about.
Right. One of the things behind HTTPS was specifically to deny the ability for proxying. That's right. One of the design goals.
And an example of that would be if Lindsay and I both had a secret translation code, we could speak through Miles as a proxy, if you will, but he can't actually do any modification or even understand what the communication is. All he'd be able to do is pass the data along perfectly. Mm-hmm. And that's not a problem.
Right. So in the HTTPS model, mm-hmm. if Lyle were to have a conversation with Lindsay, it would be something like this.
I'd say, step off in front of him.
No, you would say...
I'd say what? Wouldn't I say...
You're running the browser. So you're going to type in a particular message. I'm the man in the middle. I'm the proxy.
Okay. But wouldn't my communication be totally...
No.
Okay. Lindsay, have you made chocolate cookies yesterday?
I've seen...
Well, yes, I have.
Except she wouldn't have understood what you were asking, but then it comes back.
All right. Shall we go on to the next story, sir? Thank you for that update. I'm hoping that they come to task on this. It's a shame when you hear small ISPs doing the bad, because, of course, the large ISPs probably don't get caught, and they probably do the same thing.
Actually, Charter used to, but they stopped doing it around March of this year. And another ISP, Iowa Telecom, used to, but they stopped middle of last year.
Use secure socket layers when you can. Definitely. I mean, Google searching, for example. If you're going to give data, just give it to Google directly, not to anybody in the middle. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency is what DARPA stands for. And what's the story?
Gotcha. Basically, they're addressing the issue of hacking hardware. And they're saying that it's something that can't be stopped and only mitigated, and that it's much more difficult for them to deal with than the problems of hacking software. I'm not sure exactly why that is, but... they said that over the past 2 months, they awarded 9 contracts totaling $49 million for a new program called Integrity and Reliability of Integrated Circuits, the IRIS program.
Mm-hmm.
And it just checks for compromised computer chips somewhere along the hardware creation line. So 7 companies and 2 universities have received awards to help DARPA with this. Right now, the Pentagon buys about 1% of all the world's integrated circuit production.
Wow, that's huge.
So, yeah. 1% of the world's. The America's defense community.
Wait, really? That's, that's just phenomenal, because integrated circuits are in everything.
Yeah.
Wow.
1% of the world's.
I guess that's what happens
circuits.
When you have such a large military budget.
Yes. Imagine that. My tax dollars at work. So the defense community uses too many of these in order for them all to be monitored in the process. So the Defense Science Board warned that foreign adversaries could slip backdoors into chips destined for installation in important military gear. So hacked circuits could be tweaked to malfunction early or provide kill switches for weapon systems and things like that. Much of the production is currently taking place in countries like Taiwan, China, Japan, and South Korea. And so it's hard to monitor what's happening during the production phase and the assembly phase unless we know at the assembly plant and at the manufacture plant that we have full security. And there's just too many hands in the pot to be able to monitor everything. So at this point, what they're trying to do is create organizations that monitor different phases, but that the most secure phases are still kept within, you know, within our boundaries or within places that can be secured. But yeah, they're just saying it's a problem that they don't quite know what to do about at this point.
I mean, even when you're talking about a lot of the chips and such on the devices are going to be off the shelf from some large corporation. And, of course, if there's somebody in the large corporation that's trying to do certain backdoors or whatever, you're not really necessarily going to know that that batch of chips you just bought is identical to another set if it responds the same way. I mean, it's really quite complicated. So this project is basically saying, help, how do we do this? And they put out a lot of money and they say, if you can figure out how to do this better, you get some of this money.
Exactly.
And I would imagine that, I mean, it's an extremely complicated process. It used to be that I'd have friends that had security clearance and they could work for certain companies. But it is true. I don't know how to solve. I wouldn't know how to solve that problem except for to image everything, X-ray everything. You know, check it against what you expect the design to be, and backwards engineer everything to some degree while you're using it. Wow.
And that's part of the things that they have been doing is X-ray. You know, just imaging and things like that. But it's really hard to guarantee anything like that. I mean, other security stuff like software, what they're talking about, you know, you can have people in one building that need really secure clearance to get in and out. And, but there's too much of a volume happening for us to be able to narrow it down to one place.
I mean,
everything.
Even like when you just say the security systems, right? You know, you have to have a card and you have to have a scanner and where was that scanner made? Who made those chips? Who assembled it? Does it have the firmware update that you expect, or did somebody put something else on it at some point?
Right.
Wow. Well,
that's hope that scary $49 million goes to good use.
How much, 49?
$49 million.
Come up with a good idea on how to make sure that everything's safe.
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't even get the stuff that I have to work appropriately, let alone know if something's been hacked. Well, let's talk a little bit more about hacking. Well, Miles?
The break.
Oh, the break. I was going to jump right to phones, but I guess I should do the break. Huh? So smart. Thank you.
Go team.
Geekspeak on KSP is supported by Cruise.io Internet, offering commuters quiet drop-in office space with a 10 gigabit fiber internet connection at 877 Cedar Street in downtown Santa Cruz. Information is at cruiseio.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio KSP. The Geeks Today are Lindsay Lonnie and Miles Elam. My name is Lyle Troxell. We'll be taking your calls now with questions and comments about technology. You can ask us anything you would like. The geek bit for today, I'll just mention that this week I've been listening to Gweek, G-W-E-E-K. I think it's gweek.com, but it's it's a podcast from the Boing Boing producers. Boing Boing's a large blog, probably one of the most famous blogs, if you will. Mark Frauenfauer is the person that runs that podcast. I think it's on like episode 7. We've had Mark on a few times on Geekspeak. He does some amazing stuff. And he's an interesting guy. The podcast is definitely in its early stages. It's doing some radio junkie problems, but I think they're getting better at it. And it's a fun little podcast about geeky stuff, movies, games, and comics. We normally talk about what's hot on the news in the public sphere, if you will. We talk about politics, about copyright. What they are talking about is like the most recent indie games, the most recent comic books, talk to the artists. So I love it from that perspective, of course, because it's a really meaty discussion about geeky culture that's not just computers, if you will. But of course, gaming is. Anyway, Gweek is the name of it. G-W-E-E-K. Gweek with a G in the front of it. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KSP.
And there is a second geek bit.
Please.
Which is a website known as Kias. And we've been doing it at my work, which is turning fitness and health into a game.
Kias.
Yeah, Kias. And the idea is you put in a set of goals for the week. It could be like, I'm going to walk 60 minutes three times this week, or I'm going to cut out high fructose corn syrup 5 times this week, or I'm going, things like that. and then you get points for them.
Does it have like an iPhone app?
I don't know.
Interesting though. So you're assigning a game reward system to make your healthier choices.
Yeah. And it also puts forth some like quizzes saying like that you get points for. Mm-hmm. Like if you answer the quiz, you get points for it. So you have an incentive to.
When you're saying you're doing this at work, are you competing with your coworkers?
Yes.
Okay, you're probably winning on the high fructose syrup.
No, I'm not actually.
Really?
I'm
you were like
27th or something like that.
But on the high fructose corn syrup, you don't do that, right?
Right, but you have to choose certain things. Some things are worth more than others.
So couldn't you just choose things that are easy for you to do already? Like, I won't smoke this week. Yay, worth a lot of points. Of course, I never smoked.
yes, and I have. Things like have half of your dinner plate be filled with vegetables.
Oh, I see. So there's like five or six things for that few days.
Far more than that, but yeah.
Okay, but you can sign up for as many of them as you want.
No. You have to choose a set of three.
And they all have certain values.
Yes.
Oh, very cool.
And how often you do them. So if you do it twice a week, it's not going to be worth as much as if you do it seven times a week. Because the numbers get larger, like exponential. Exponential, but I mean they get much higher, more so than linear.
Got it. Okay, the name of this again, and please spell it this time.
No, see, what I want people to do, because,
yes, please.
Full disclosure, I get points if I sign people up for that.
Ah, I see.
Is you send you go to our website and you send a message to the geeks, and I will send you a link for an invite, and then you can sign up.
And the name of it again?
Kias.
Kias. So you go to geekspeak.org, go to contact us, put in the little subject.
Yeah, or you can just say the fitness.
Want to play with Miles.
Yeah, the fitness game.
Fitness game,
want to play with Miles or something like that.
And Miles will respond to that. All right. Now, keep in mind, I've responded to about 90 Gmail plus requests.
Yeah, so I'm making up for
it. Okay. So you do these ones. But I'll sign up as well. It sounds like a great way to trick yourself into playing a game about better health. I think that's awesome. Let's go ahead and take a call, shall we? First, I do want to mention that Geekspeak on KOSP is supported by Poetic Justice Project, a program of the William James Association presenting John Steinbeck's Of Mice and Men, Sunday, August 7th at 3:30 p.m. at the Steinbeck Center in Salinas. Information and tickets online at poeticjusticeproject.org. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio KOSP. This is Geekspeak. We're taking calls with questions and comments about technology. The phone number 1-800-655-5877 is available for your finger dancing pleasures. First, the call will be from Tony, and Tony is in Santa Cruz, California, as are we. Welcome to Geekspeak, Tony.
Thank you very much. I am a member or a client of Cruzio, so I can extend your sponsor's commercial a little bit. Anyway, I'm 76 years old, not much of a nerd, but what rings a bell is that I was on an Amtrak train and someone with a pacemaker was having trouble because they had Wi-Fi. You would think that they could do something in terms of blocking out Wi-Fi for people whose lives depend on pacemakers.
I think that assumption that the pacemaker is having problems with Wi-Fi was probably not true.
We have a library that has no Wi-Fi for that reason in here.
Really?
The Capitola Library was everything hardwired because of that particular problem.
See, we've covered a lot of stories about this. I haven't seen any kind of case where that's actually happening.
Well, it would be interesting to find out what their motivation was.
The issue is that the same technology that does Wi-Fi, a lot of microwaves operate in that same frequency range. So it seems to me that a microwave, which is a lot more power energy levels, would be
another,
more dangerous. But
context in which I heard the word hacking is I gave a DVD player to a friend of mine. It was left by a neighbor, mm-hmm. and when I handed him, Apex, he says, that's hackable.
Yes.
I didn't know what the hell it meant. But apparently they have a little thing in there that plays in every area. In other words,
they
can only play in certain areas of the world.
That's right. Yeah. Apex, the manufacturer that makes DVD players, Apex, they were the first ones to make actually region-free DVD players. And regions, there are five regions in the U.S. The United States is not region one, Europe is region two, and so on. And
I had one of those.
Miles, you did have an Apex. I remember that. And depending on where you buy the disc, it has that encoding. So if you have a player that works in the U.S. and you get a disc in Australia, you can't play on your player. And
that's
so we don't know that normally because, of course, most of the discs we buy happen to be in the same region that we have the disc. And this is all based so that they could release movies in different areas at different times, right? So they could release
you find it hard to believe, but at 76 and not being a nerd, I don't understand a thing you're saying. I have one more medical issue.
Uh-huh.
I met some people. I was at a party in San Francisco a week ago, and three guys that sounded very much like you were talking in the corner of the kitchen. They were talking to no one else. They were nerds, and they were looking at their devices, and I overheard things like, well, Google's going out. They were predicting certain services were going to go away at some future time. And I just walked up, and I said, you guys, you ever use your cell phones up against your ear? They said, hell no, that causes brain cancer. And if you say that in Santa Cruz, people think you're absolutely – I said, where'd you find out? He said, well, it's in the instructions. It's in the fine print inside the old instructions. So I was real surprised to have those guys come up with that. And I said, you know about holding it away from your ear? He said, yeah, 5/8 of an inch, just the way it was recommended. So, I watch people put of all ages, 7-year-old kids at Costco, pushing these things up against their heads. Maybe you could help out by telling people, what they really should be doing. I have 4 grandchildren.
I think the general consensus about that is that cell phone use, even holding it up to your head, is about as dangerous as what? Cucumbers? What was it?
Pickles.
Pickles.
Well, you sound like a typical American because the guy who found that out.
Dangerous. Issue with cell phones being dangerous. Yeah, the recommendation is that they are more dangerous stuck up to your head, though it's statistically almost unimportant, as are like eating pickles are dangerous, right? So, but yeah,
the 5/8 inch.
I don't think that's going
to
matter.
That sounds arbitrary
but
to me.
There's no reason not to use, something like I use my cell phone most of the time with a headset. And a wire that goes up to my ear, and the antenna is actually happens to be probably inducing electricity.
Even worse.
Actually, I don't think it is. I think it doesn't centralize around that. It centralizes the other antenna. But yeah, don't use cell phones right up against your head if you can. Have some separation. I think that's probably a good idea. Though it's pretty insignificant. Like it'd be a lot more safe for you to watch yourself when you're in traffic, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're going, I'm worried about cell phones, then you should be worried about things like, I'm worried about the sun. I'm worried about driving. I'm worried about biking. I'm worried about running.
Dangerous things in the world.
Because they are all greater risks than the very small chance that you will get that particular rare type of cancer that is on the edge of statistical significance for testing.
Edge of statistical significance, but there. It does exist at this level.
But that actually reminds me, I had a flyer put on my car recently. I just wanted to speak to it, being in Santa Cruz. That someone was putting up a flyer saying, we need to watch out for this, the cell phone stuff that's coming on, the smart meters. The smart meters are going to cause us cancer, and they have all these problems, and they're non-ionizing radiation. And it really got my hackles up because they were saying it's non-ionizing radiation. In other words, they've taken the vocabulary of someone who knows what they're talking about and then just appropriated it for scare tactics.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really frustrating. So,
the reason why pseudoscience is called pseudoscience is because they use the words that sound like science. So it's like science.
Right. Because non-ionizing radiation means that it doesn't
ionize, which is actually one of the dangerous things.
Right. It doesn't knock electrons off their orbit on molecules and therefore can't interrupt the replication of DNA.
Right. Except for by other means, potentially. But we won't get into that. From Santa Cruz, Doug, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, perfectly.
Yeah, I'm on speakerphone.
Okay, good. Thank you.
I was figuring, we're probably adaptable and eventually we'll be able to grow antenna out of our heads anyway, so.
But other people will be able to hack them, so go on.
Yeah, I mean, all of this stuff about microwave, we're very adaptable people. My question was about my computer. I have Windows, XP, Explorer, and the computer that I have is about 7 years. Hello?
Yeah, we're still here.
About 7 years old. Mm-hmm. And I play this game on Windows Explorer. If you go to get inside the games and you start, you'll get like this thing called zone.com where you can play people from all over the world, and you can play checkers. You can play different card games, hearts, and something called Reversi.
Right. It's one of these online game locations, lots of games, and you can play against other people.
Zone.com.
Very cool. What was your question?
So I'm playing this game, and all of a sudden my computer feels like it's wavering, like it feels like it's going to, when you shut it down and the Windows kind of all collapses into the middle? It felt like that, only it would, restore itself, and it would, kind of, blinkish. Hmm. No, but it was microsecond blink, So it was kind of like, it looked like it was going to crumble, or it looked like it was all shaking.
Sounds like a monitor driver, I mean, a monitor problem or a graphics card problem where it was happened to come online with this. The game you were playing, what was the game you were playing?
It was on Zone.com. I believe it was the Reverse Eye.
Is that a graphic intensive game? Is there a lot going on in the graphics?
Well, I mean, you know, you're negating somebody else's dots with your dots.
Mm. Do you know the game Othello? It's Othello.
Huh?
It's Othello. The game Othello. Reverse Eye.
It's not
like Zelda.
Right. Yeah, I guess the reason I ask that is that sometimes when you use your graphics cards in a heavy manner, they heat up more and the problems that are part of the hardware might show up. This doesn't sound like one of those cases.
I was thinking more a power issue. House power or the power supply to the computer was becoming like more.
Yeah, but it only happens during this game. Like if I'm like, you know.
During higher load.
If I'm looking at Yahoo or something else, you know.
Yeah. So what's happening when you're using a game like this? That's probably a flash-based game, and it's loading a lot of content inside the browser. You're actually pushing your machine probably more than you normally push your machine, and so you're starting to see the boundaries where your machine is actually failing. So it's a 7-year-old machine. There's probably a component on the board that, when it gets hot, a problem emerges. It could be a power supply, it could be a graphics card, it could be in the monitor. Well, it's probably not the monitor.
Yeah, there are two quick things that you can try that I would recommend over the phone. Beyond that, you'd probably have to have someone take a look at your computer itself.
Uh-huh.
One is download a newer version of Adobe Flash and make sure you're on the newest version. That's just good for security purposes.
Uh-huh.
And the other is try a different browser like Chrome or Firefox and see when you go to that website if it does the same thing.
You're doing software solutions. It's 7 years old.
Yes, it is, but it may be.
Okay, so I've got one more solution for you. This machine probably has a lot of dust in it, and it probably needs to be cleaned out.
Uh-huh.
And you can do this relatively easily yourself.
I did that actually about 6 months ago. I took the back off of it and I didn't vacuum it, but I, you know, very carefully cleaned it all out.
Yeah. Okay. 6 months, you could maybe do that again, but maybe you don't need to do that at all.
Well, that was the first time I did it in 2 years.
Yeah.
I recommended the software fix because software fixes are cheaper.
I think that Flash, what you're talking about, the Adobe Flash might be...
It might be a good thing to do. Yeah. Thank you so much, Doug, for the call.
Thank you.
And Lyle, the reason why I brought up Flash was also because if he has an older version of Flash, the newer version may be more efficient. In other words, not stress the system out as much.
Absolutely. Good point. Well, let's go ahead and go on with NASA in a second from Lindsay. She's going to talk about spacecraft and NASA and such, I think. and Miles, what's up with format shifting? What is format shifting?
Format shifting is when you take a CD and you convert it to an MP3, or you take a CD and you convert it to an AUG file, or you Vorbit files.
Software translation.
Yes.
Okay.
Or if you take a CD and turn it to the AAC format that is found in iTunes.
Mm-hmm.
This is currently illegal, both in the U.S. and in the
UK. So taking an audio CD, putting it in your computer, getting the sounds, so the songs off of it so you can play it even when the CD's not in there, is actually illegal?
Right. I believe there's an exception for things like iTunes because Apple has a deal with the music companies for a specific method that the songs come in. But in general, if you just took some program out there that converts a CD to MP3 and a DVD program.
Or
DVD ripping.
DVD ripping. And we're really clear that's very much illegal in the sense that you've actually broken the DMCI, the
Digital Millennium Copyright Act, DMCA.
And Handbrake is an application you can download and rip CDs to your computer, and that currently is illegal?
Downloading the program is not illegal. Actually converting it is technically illegal, although the various organizations like the RIAA and the MPAA have stated that they don't have any intentions of suing people for it. It's still illegal.
They could potentially win the suit if they found out somebody had done that.
Right. That selective enforcement is a little sketchy.
It's funny because a few weeks ago I talked about taking one of the Harry Potter movies that I wanted to rewatch and ripping it on my computer so I could watch it on a portable device. And I didn't think much about that, you know, because I do that kind of thing sometimes. If I've got a DVD and I want to change the format to play it somewhere else, I can do that myself.
Well, the news is the United Kingdom has, it looks like they're going to be moving towards saying that format shifting will be legalized.
Interesting.
Which I think is a good step. For that fact of, if you change a CD to an MP3 and then you put that MP3 up on P2P,
that's networks, still illegal.
That's still illegal and would still be under UK law, and we're not advocating that on this program. What we are talking about is simply you have a CD, you've already paid for that CD, and that CD is not useful for you when you're out jogging.
Right.
But the MP3 is, that you're transferring it to yourself. Like, there's no money change, there's no commerce involved, there's mm-hmm. no person-to-person involved, it's just you. That seems to me no different than if you have that CD and you let a friend borrow it.
Right.
And that's kind of where the UK legislation is going toward. Hmm. Or the exception they're carving into copyright law.
Well, so couldn't you theoretically then rip a CD for your own purposes and then loan the MP3 to a friend?
The idea, when I say loan a CD, that means that you're no longer using it in one format, you're only using it in the other, it's still a single copy.
The idea is,
if you're out jogging, you're listening to the MP3, you're not listening to the CD and the MP3 at the same time. Mm-hmm. It's one or the other. So there's no law, I mean, there's no public performance, there's no
copying, of course, because
for multiple uses.
A person that owns the copyright, if they release a CD and they also on their website have MP3s and they suggest you buy both of them if you want to have two different formats, you could see a case where a person that's a creator would want to be able to provide it in multiple formats so they could retain more revenue. They could have different prices for the different things, right?
Right. And my desire for how I get paid is not necessarily how I get paid. I would love if someone would send me a $5 check every time I do Geek Speak just for my own purposes. But
$5?
Hey, you know,
almost covers gas.
It's a public service. It's all good. But that doesn't necessarily entail that people would be willing to do it or that like I have standing to do so. In U.S. copyright law, you do have standing to say, I need you to pay for both of them. Mm-hmm. This is where it's being decided as to whether or not that is a reasonable question to ask, whether someone has the ability to say you have to pay for it in every single format, as opposed to you've bought the license for listening to that music in one format and there's no commerce involved in transfer for someone else. So why can't you do that? And right. Why can't you do a format shift?
Yeah, you bought it, but we're going to regulate how you use it.
Right. Not so fun.
Not easy to
cool.
do.
Right. If you purchased, and they talked about, you didn't purchase the music, you've purchased a license and that medium isn't what you paid for, then that really does lend itself towards, you paid for a license for that music, it doesn't matter what medium it is on. So mm-hmm. that's where copyright gets a little at odds.
This whole space gets really confusing when you have family. Because I, you know, buy a CD, I rip it to my iPod, I ripped it in iTunes so that I can play it on my iPhone, and then my son's iPod gets synced to my computer because he doesn't have his own computer, right? And I sync it that way. And then those songs that I've paid for myself go to my son, and then he, you know, goes away for a couple of days with his mom, and I don't see him, and he's listening to the music. And we're two copies being listened to, but we're family, so it's okay. That space is kind of complicated. And who... So...
Well, according to the copyright lawyer that we had on, actually that space is... usually has a case law of being a safe being okay. harbor because it's within family members.
And then when my son is 18, is it still okay? And like when? Anyway, we'll move on to the things. Miles in a second is going to talk about horrible diseases that the United Nations knows about. But first, NASA.
So the Mars Reconnaissance Orbiter has detected signs of what appear to be seasonal flows of salty water on the surface of Mars.
Wait, how do they know it's salty?
That's a great question. Other than it looks like it's syrup-like if there is water.
Uh-huh. And it'd be brine-like. They'd be seeing very salty.
Thick, briny, salty water.
Which makes sense because it's cold there.
Yes, very cold.
Seasonal as in like annually or Marsily annually?
There is a Mars summer that is a little bit warmer. And they haven't actually seen the fluid or the water. They've just seen the dark places where it looks like there's... It suddenly appears as dark, and then the flows seem to advance and then retreat. And they just have these cyclical pictures, but they can't actually see if there is water yet.
But it's darn good evidence.
Yes, darn
Something's
good evidence of water on
forth,
Mars,
like,
which would indicate possible life on Mars, current life. And they were thinking before, oh, it's too cold, and there would have maybe in the past been life on Mars, but now they're second-guessing that if there is any sort of liquid currently on the planet.
I really thought it was really cold, even in the summers.
That's why
it
has
is,
to be salty.
But that's why it has to be very, very,
very salty.
It's just like if you have trying to think of a good example. Use
when you're making ice
rock
cream.
Salt.
There you go.
Rock ice salt cream. To make ice cream.
Right.
And the reason you use that is because it can get colder than.
I know there's a saturation point of ice of salt. Excuse me, in water. You would think that that would get. I'm surprised. I thought Mars was a lot colder than that. I guess there's another heat source as well, potentially, or is it just the sun's in the summer is just enough? Fascinating. I mean, that's definitely something to keep looking for. Thanks for the Mars imaging system. It's very cool.
There's some great pictures. I'll post the link.
Oh, yeah. Good. Geekspeak.org for all information we talk about on the show is up there, of course. Miles, what horrible diseases are the United Nations talking about now?
They're talking about Rinderpest, which is it's a cow disease. And it's actually a very virulent cattle disease that will just take out 95% of a herd that infects. Has been, actually it'll affect just about any cloven-hoofed beast.
Okay.
This is from the New York Times. So cattle, buffalo, large antelopes, deer, pigs, warthogs, giraffes, wildebeest.
Pan.
And the news about this horrible, horrible disease is that in a ceremony in Rome, the United Nations has officially declared that for only the second time in history, a disease has been wiped off the face of the earth. The other disease being smallpox.
By man's movement.
Yes.
I think that diseases get wiped off the face of the earth all the time. We just don't know about it. But
whole genus, if you will.
Genus of a disease was wiped off. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming because we've been managing that disease for a while and working on it.
Because we have been trying to do vaccination for it. Yeah. And we have been actively trying to get rid of this horrible blight.
It's weird. You can't vaccinate all the wild deer and stuff. I guess the disease shows up more in dense concentrations.
Exactly.
And of course, we killed most large dense concentrations of herd animals. Let's see. This disease is horrible. Let's slaughter all the buffalo. Perfect. It's solved.
Well, a lot of these horrible diseases.
Thin out their numbers.
Right.
A lot of these horrible diseases can be taken care of in the wild just because a stricken beast will usually fall off by the wayside.
Right.
And any group
but this
that
disease
was
has
infected.
Been around for millions of years and now it's gone.
Yes. In which case it's been on the outskirts.
Right.
Because any truly deadly disease can only flare up and can never really, it can either wipe out an entire population and then end, or it can have a population be able to deal with it either through social means or migratory means.
We did it small dead virus inject in the body. Vaccines. I'm glad that we did it with vaccines rather than just slaughtering all the hoofed animals.
Yeah,
it's like. Well, I'm sure there was a fair amount of slaughter.
Yeah,
as well.
I'm sure there was. Oh my gosh! You know what? We're running out of time on Geekspeak.
Yes.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Miles, for that. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of online today with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use.